my whole goal in life is to make all of these really hard mathematical concepts consumable for people. So I actually lead a 6-hour advanced quantitative methods training for SMR. It's on your webinar track. Yes.
Yes.
I think it was the most attended webinar in 2023. People must not have had much to do that year.
or it was just really amazing.
Or there's that.
Yes. Hi, I'm Gabby Custers, Head of Global Marketing and Events at SMR, and I'm here today at our Chicago event, Art and Science of Innovation, with Megan Sykes, founder and CEO of Numerius.
Correct.
Yes. Welcome.
Thank you.
Now, before we start, because of course you took the stage and you have a lot to say about the different case studies that you brought to us, but talk to me about Numerius. What is it? How did you found it?
Sure.
Tell me everything.
Everything. Do we have enough time?
I think so. We can manage.
Okay. Well, founder and CEO of a company called Numerius. The name Numerius is a mashup of the words numerically curious. So we are quantitative strategic consulting firm, and we help companies find the story in the numbers. So we're helping big brands and startups figure out which features they should build that's going to appeal to customers, mm-hmm. how to price their products or services so that people will actually buy them. Mm-hmm. What do they need to say about that product or service to be attractive to that target consumer?
Yeah.
And we do all this using math.
Okay. That's very interesting.
Yes.
And sounds very complicated too.
Well, I try to... My whole goal in life is to make all of these really hard mathematical concepts consumable for people. So I actually lead a 6-hour advanced quantitative methods training for SMR. It's on your webinar track. Yes.
Yes.
I think it was the most attended webinar in 2023. People must not have had much to do that year.
or it was just really amazing.
Or there's that.
Yes.
So we do a lot of quantitative work at Numerius, and you asked about my founder story, which will also kind of segue into how I ended up meeting Mill. But I have a master's in math and statistics, so uber nerd. And I spent 8 years at a full service marketing research firm. And then I joined Sawtooth Software in 2015. And I worked there for 4 years. And they're kind of the industry leader when it comes to survey software for conjoint and max diff analyses, which is our big shtick at Numerius. But I was there for 4 years and got to travel around the world teaching people how to use the software and how to run conjoint and max diff experiments. And through that, I met a lot of different companies, a lot of different people. And sometimes when I was teaching, it might sound overwhelming to some folks to actually try to do this on their own and go back home without me by their side leading them through it. And so oftentimes they would just pay our analytics team to do the one or two conjoint projects instead of them doing it on their own. And so through that is how I met Google Nest. Nest Learning Thermostats got bought by Google. And I did a project for Nest, and they were like, hey, this is super great. Can you come and run all of the conjoints at Google for all of our hardware products? So that's doorbells, smart cameras, thermostats, locks, you know, you name it. And ironically, I was not ready to move to California, and I was really enjoying my job at Sawtooth. And so I told Google, you know, thanks, but no thanks. I'm only going to leave Sawtooth if I start my own business. And I thought that was the end of the conversation. Google turned around and said, sounds good, start your own business and we'll give you a 2-year contract. How do you say no to that?
You don't.
Silver platter. I don't look at myself as this big risk-taking entrepreneur, right? Yeah. I was basically given the chance, and here we are now in year 5 of the business. So I guess I'm not allowed to call myself a startup anymore.
No.
But we have 10 employees. We're 100% virtual. And yeah, we help brands like Google and Mill, who I'll talk with you about a little bit more today, and all types of companies.
Wow. What a fascinating story.
Thanks.
It's really interesting, your journey that you've taken and, you know, the amazing opportunities that you've had out of your own merit.
Yes.
Of course.
Some of it's luck. Yeah. Some of it's hard work, right?
Exactly.
And being in the right place at the right time.
Exactly. But I do want to talk about the partnership between Numerius and Mill.
Yes.
And how it came about.
Sure. So through Google, like I mentioned, I was doing a bunch of conjoints for them. And one of the conjoints was for a gentleman named Harry Tannenbaum, who is now the co-founder of Mill. Mm-hmm. So we worked on a conjoint together at Google. And then in the pandemic, when he was at home, he decided to leave Google and was thinking about going off on his own, starting something.
Okay.
Turns out he started smelling his trash, watching all the, you know, things accumulate while we're all locked in our homes. And he called his friend, Matt Rogers, who was the co-founder of Nest, mm-hmm. and convinced him, like, hey, we need to come up with a solution to solve for the food waste problem.
Yeah.
And Matt Rogers was like, yes, we do. Absolutely. So Harry and Matt, who were formerly at Nest together, then started Mill. And here we are today.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm very fascinated about all the stories that you're telling me today, because they take such unexpected turns and become the success story all of a sudden.
Yeah.
That's really impressive.
Hey, thanks. Yeah, it's been a fun journey. Definitely unpredictable, right? I remember, I knew of Matt Rogers, right? Uh-huh. Because he's a man who started the Nest thermostat and then was at Google, right? And then they leave, and I'll never forget, Harry had me on a kickoff call for a project, and all of a sudden Matt was on the Google Meet, and I remember being like, oh, he's very important, and I'm just, you know, little old Megan sitting in my virtual office in Michigan. But, you know, Harry's always been one of my biggest supporters, and vice versa. Like, I really truly believe in the product that they're building, and I love that we can have this relationship together.
Well, again, all out of your own merit, mm-hmm. and hard work. And it's very impressive, your story that you're telling me. I mean, this is book worthy, just so you know. Book worthy right there.
Just have to find the time for that.
Well, I can imagine that lacks a bit of that.
So
walk us through the research process.
Sure. So what we talked about today in our presentation was really trying to help Mill go from idea to launch. And then after launch, just continuing to iterate on that with research. And I'll just give you maybe like three snack size pieces of information from that process. So once Matt and Harry had the idea, they qualitatively started asking friends about Mill's mission and if they believed in it, and if they thought that a solution to that problem would be acceptable to, you know, target consumers. And they were getting really great feedback. So they decided to quantify that data, and they needed investment dollars in order to actually bring the product to market. And so what we did was we did a market sizing study for them so that we could give them the data for what I call TLAs, or three-letter acronyms, right? They're like everywhere. But investors really care about these three-letter acronyms, TAM, SAM, and SOM, right? Total addressable market, serviceable addressable market, and then serviceable obtainable market. And this really helps investors understand the size of the opportunity, how much revenue could potentially be generated, and validate the market fit for the product. Okay. And so through this market sizing study, we were able to give Mill that data. They were able to put it in their pitch deck, and they ended up having a really successful Series A funding round that was actually led by Bill Gates's Breakthrough Ventures, Google Ventures, and a handful of other like really big wig sustainability firms in the investment space. So that was like idea check, right? Let's move forward to concepting. Okay. Then we did more quantitative research, prioritizing, you know, what it was that we actually needed to build to get people to adopt the machine, because everybody wants to compost. Everybody wants the environment to be clean and green and sustainable.
Yes.
But it's really hard to change consumer behavior, right? Mm-hmm. So saying is one thing, doing is something else. So leaning into quantitative research to figure out, what do we need to say about the product? What do we need to put in the product to make it super easy for people to say, yes, I want this? And ultimately, like, what can we price it at so that we're still making some profit,
yeah,
while, you know, getting enough people to buy the device. And then with all of that data, they built the product. They launched in January of 2023. And so far, we've had really great press about it. And they were named to the, I think it's Forbes Innovative Products 2024 list. They were number 27, along with like Taylor Swift, Mattel, all of these massive, NVIDIA, all these massive brands that we know today.
Yeah.
And Mill was there as well. So super cool. Love seeing research inform decision making for product launch. And then now we're in the phase of launching the second bin and thinking about other alternatives as well. And if all of my clients were like Mill, what an easy job I would have, right? They're just like, sign us up for more research. Let's make good decisions. Of course, there's always that element of being innovative and them having their own ideas, but really supporting it and allowing research to help fill in some of those gaps.
That's very incredible. I was sitting at the reception desk when my colleague came out and said, I've just seen the most amazing product. She had just walked out of your presentation and she said, I've seen this bin that turns your waste into compost after a few. It's such a brilliant idea.
It's brilliant. Yes.
And I thought, yeah, that's vegan.
Yes. I would encourage everyone to go to mill.com, M-I-L-L. And there's a 1.5 minute video that is just like hits all of the great points of, you know, how great this product is, how bad food waste can be for the world. Like, one of the biggest culprits of food waste are households. And by biggest culprits, I literally mean like 63% of the food waste that's generated in the United States is generated by households. So of course, we need a solution to bring that number down and bring that overall like food waste number down, because it really isn't great for the environment when it's sitting in landfills without oxygen, turning into methane, et cetera. So it is a great product. And like I said, I'm fully supportive of it and it's beautiful. So you wouldn't want it in the kitchen.
Exactly. You've converted at least one person here.
That's great.
In the process, did you see any surprises or unexpected insights that came from the research that you conducted?
Yeah. One big surprise, I think, for all of us was when we initially started talking about the bin, we were referencing a lot the trash in your home, like the trash bin, filling up your trash bin, don't put it in your trash bin, put it in Mill. And when we were doing some more simple pricing research techniques and asking people, hey, what do you think a device like this would cost, or what would you expect it to cost? We were getting values back in around the $200 range.
Okay.
Now, this would make sense if their context is relative to a regular trash bin, right? Mm. Like a $200 bin is probably 2 to 4x what a regular trash can would cost. But this is like a high-end appliance, right? There's a lot of stuff going on under the hood. I actually have been to Mill headquarters and gotten to see the device actually like broken apart and torn down. And literally half of the bin is a computer. And the other half is what, you know, you actually put your food grinds in. So we really had to reframe how we were talking about the bin to get consumers to understand that you're more in the high-end appliance price than you are in the, you know, regular household trash can. So, the Mill bin itself today is $9.99. So that's a pretty big gap between where consumers were and where we need to sell it at to make a profit. And so now we need the messaging to align closer with that. So that was one really, really key insight that we found in the research.
Yeah, I can really imagine that that would have been almost a blocker, because as a marketer, you're thinking about, well, because I'm a marketer, you're thinking about a product that is a household appliance, but it can be categorized in the consumer's mind as a simple trash can that just does something here and there. And so I can really imagine that was an obstacle.
Yeah. Yes, but glad we uncovered it before, you know, we spent millions of dollars on brand campaigns. I'll also mention one other really interesting finding. You know, when Mill first launched, we launched under the idea of offering this as a hardware as a service. So you would actually subscribe and you would be a member. You would pay a monthly fee and you would get the device, you'd get the bin. But at the end of the month or when you filled up the bin, you could actually ship your grounds back to Mill. And then we would convert it, convert it into chicken feed that could then be sold to farmers who could then use it to feed the chickens, who would then create the food that we have on our table, right? And it's this whole closed loop process, which is incredibly sustainable if you think about it. And so that was how the Mill bin launched. But we were getting feedback that we were missing out on a large group of consumers who actually wanted to keep the grounds, right? You go through this whole process of putting your food waste in here. You see it ground down into just coffee grinds.
Yes.
And then you're attached to it. You don't want to just like send it out into the wild, at least for some people, right? Or for people like myself, we live 40 acres out in the country. And so I could use that compost and just put it into my garden once it turns into compost. So just recently, when we launched a second version of the bin, we now offer a buy now alternative for the folks who don't want to ship the grounds back. So you can ship the grounds back, you can keep them, or you can buy the bin outright. And that was something also that we uncovered through these series of research projects we did together.
It seems like there have been a lot of work put into this. Many, many months put into this.
Years.
Yeah. Because it seems like you have really observed the different size of the consumers, their different pain points, and how versatile this product is and what they can do with it and different options. It's a lot of work you've put into it.
It is, but I think once you see the bin, like the lady said about how great it was, you know, once you see it, you realize like there probably was a lot of work put into bringing this thing to market. And yes, we started doing work for Mill back in 2020, and now we're on year 4 of doing research projects with them. So it's been awesome to see how much they've really leaned into, you know, data-driven insights.
Yeah. Now, 2020 was a very interesting year. Very, yes. Very interesting.
Why do you say that?
Exactly. Like what happened?
And locked that out.
It's funny, can I understand the consumers, they shifted their way of doing things during that time. The pandemic came in. We saw that people were taking different interests. They're utilizing their time a little bit more to themselves.
Right.
And taking on new hobbies, activities.
Sourdough. Yep.
Yeah. Did that affect or impact the research that you were conducting back then, as opposed to today, where things are going back to normal, or have gone back to normal? Essentially.
Yeah, what a great question. So one of the other pieces of research we've done for the Mill team is a segmentation where we cluster all different types of consumers into these like 5 segments based on their attitudes and behaviors in sustainability and things like that. And what's been interesting is that year over year, we continue to find those same 5 groups, regardless of kind of the macroeconomic effects, et cetera, but their size has either contracted or expanded. So that, what we call the early evangelists, the folks that are like really high on the adoption curve, typically tend to have a bit more disposable income, you know, have a lot of tech products in the home, also have a very keen interest in the Mill device. Well, that group itself is expanding and contracting based on macroeconomic effects. So back in the initial 2020, right, like everybody's at home, I have all this food waste, what can I do with it? Here's a great solution, and might as well spend my money on that, right? But then while it's starting to get tightened, things like that happen, right? So maybe in later years that early evangelist segment kind of contracts, but our other more pragmatic segments get a little bit bigger. So now some of those folks are moving out of being a full-on early adopter to, I'm just going to wait another year, you know, maybe it goes on promo or something like that, right? And then the next year, maybe the enthusiast segment, early evangelist gets bigger again, right? Mm-hmm. So we're seeing the same type of consumer exist. It's just whether or not, you know, their size is large or small year over year. I will also say what's been really interesting is all of the governmental regulations that are starting to be talked about and put into place. We had a woman in the audience speak about what is happening in Canada, and it's very promotive to compost. She said almost 95% of households are composting in Canada versus it's the opposite in the United States, right? But the US is trying to track that way and is starting to enforce different laws and trying to kind of require composting and these sorts of food waste kind of management to be more of a priority over the next few years. And honestly, that's probably going to play really well in Mill's favor, because once government regulations get into place, now their en masse adoption is inevitable. So crossing our fingers that happens, you know, sooner than later.
Oh, that's very interesting. I see that that's where we're going.
Yes.
That's where we're heading.
Yeah.
100%. And people care more and more now.
They do.
It's a thing.
You want to make an impact. And especially, you know, we had a couple of speakers talk about the Gen Zers, right? Like those folks definitely want to know that they're making the world a better place. And Mill is absolutely one way of doing that. I was just Googling things and I saw Matt Rogers actually posted today a press release about the data they've been collecting on the Mill device over the past year since launch.
Yeah.
And it literally is changing the landscape of food waste. And he's got a lot of stats in that press article. I clearly haven't memorized them in the 20 minutes before, but I did just read it and I recommend that everybody else does. But it is true data, and it's the best data that we've had to date on composting behavior at home, showing that it really is going to change lives if it hasn't already, at least for the folks that do own the device today.
Very interesting, Megan. Now, for companies or organizations that are also seeking to drive similar impact or innovation, you seem brilliant. You are brilliant. So please tell me some advice that we can give these organizations.
Yeah, what is the secret sauce?
Yes, you seem to have it. From the whole story that you've been telling me so far, it's such an incredible journey that you've had.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I would like to say it's a partnership. So I think the brands that I am most successful with are the ones where we have a true kind of partnership. And it's almost like we're like the Wright brothers, where you're constantly kind of like arguing and you don't really, you know, you want to make sure everybody sees all parts of the business problem and you come to it with like the best solution possible. And so with Mill, we have great partners in Harry and Nathan, who I spoke with, and Azita and, mm-hmm. and all of the team over there. And they know that research can really help fill in the gaps. And so they come to me really with their strategic questions.
Yeah.
But then they know that I'm the expert in the research piece. And so they'll allow me to design what the best way is to kind of answer that question. And then I will know that they're the expert in what to do with these results that I give them. And then they'll make strategic decisions based on that. I feel like where we struggle with other brands sometimes is they come to me and they'll say, oh, Megan, we need a conjoint. Okay, like, let's talk about why. What's your business problem? Oh, you know, just somebody said we need no willingness to pay for this, so it's a conjoint. And then without understanding the strategic, like what I would call consequences of the research, like we could deliver insights that really miss the mark. And so having that very collaborative relationship with your stakeholders is absolutely huge. I have a nerdy blog post article on like how to really optimize that stakeholder collaboration. But that's going to be number one. And then the second thing that I would recommend to folks in this space is, yes, there is a lot of talk about AI, especially at this conference.
Yes.
But what I actually presented on is traditional marketing research techniques, which technically leverage machine learning, which we've been, you know, conjoint models and max diff models do leverage those things. So in theory, we've been using AI for, you know, many years. But it's, they need to complement each other, right? So going all in on synthetic data right away will be really difficult, especially for innovative products like Mill, right? There's no data in the LLM on food recyclers. So leaning all in on AI is not going to help Mill bring their product, their innovations to market. So really balancing like when you're leaning into the new methods and when you're relying on some of those tried and true methods, and hopefully leaning into your strategic partner on the quant or the call side to know like, oh, this is the right use case for this method versus this is the right use case for that method. And hopefully you'll see the value and bring your products to market.
It's very interesting. And actually, that is something that I hear a lot. I hear a lot between the relationships between brands and agencies. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes, brands don't allow the agencies to look into the issues, but already come with the issues without having that data.
Right.
So that's I've heard that many, many times. Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you. You're a wonderful moderator.
Oh, thank you. And you're brilliant. I've told you that already. Honestly, your story is book worthy. So okay. Sit down.
Good to know.
But your book.
Right, my book. Really, when I'm playing right home. If only it weren't just 35 minutes.
That's a good start.
It's a good start.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Gabby.
It was a pleasure.